No way.
Hey, it's part of the excitement. I mean, y'all talking about people getting off the tractor and watching it drive through the field.
Yes.
Hey, swim down in the creek and stick your hand in a log.
And there's a point you get south far enough and all the snakes will kill you.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
There is a podcast in Iowa. Funk for Profit was named by they. Faith stirred up a banker near. Then quick came an auctioneer. Making profit was their first goal. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. These formats shook us to our core. With Funk for Fun, you will not snore. Banker set all mics to on, and the mullet of podcasts was born. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. Before we knew, conversations grew. Growing corn even said F you. So won't you join Tenor Dave, Corey, and crew? Please like, share, review. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go.
If you aren't farming for fun, you probably haven't thought about growing a mullet.
All right. Welcome back to another Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
This is Corey Hillebo.
And this is David Whitaker.
A Farm for Fun episode. So listeners, if you're joining us for the first time, this is our fun format. We have a guest today with us. We will have a couple of beers and tell you what we think they taste like. The profit format has a introduction, a what's working in ag segment, and a general topic to help your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. So that is what we're looking at for two different structures here and gives us that nickname of being the mullet of agriculture podcasts.
Tanner, you said it was going to rain today.
I know. That's why we scheduled the recording. I had it in the forecast. We had this on the calendar a little bit ahead of time, and I was getting and feeling really good about it. And now I feel awful because Corey should be in the field planting.
I'm fresh off the tractor.
Fresh off the tractor.
Hopefully you as a listener are in the tractor and getting some progress done. So if you're there, reach out, grab that cell phone, hit like, hit rate, maybe leave us a review so that way we can talk about it on the podcast. We've got one from Sodak Farmer. It was quite simply, love your podcast.
Thanks, South Dakota.
Short and sweet. That's good. That's good.
So let's jump right in here and remind you, listener, that the 401 team from BW Fusion is a microbial team that has 26 microbes in it, and there's three ways to apply it. In furrow, which is their 401 program, the Environox seed treatment, which obviously is the seed treatment on your beans, and Biocast, which is a broadcasted method.
Now, I just happened to have a conversation with a guy yesterday, my agronomist, that we're getting a soil sample at our house. And he says, you know, there's a whole lot more to soil samples than just P and K anymore. There's microbes. There's all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, way ahead of you. BW Fusion.
Yep. There you go. I've been talking to Brody a bunch this week, and we're going to do some. And, you know, we decided to pull some more samples this week in a couple fields that we're going to be looking at. And, man, they're great people to work with.
Awesome. With that, let's move into having a little bit of fun.
On the Mullet of Ag podcast today, we are on the early edge of planting in the Midwest, but we're bringing in a Southern boy to share some beers with us. This man has held several positions in the ag equipment world. Here's your chance to bend an engineer's ear that put the filter in their terrible spot as he has spent time with Case IH on the cotton engineering department in the U.S. and Uzbekistan. After that, he managed a Case IH dealership in Mississippi for several years, and he has spent the last 2 years as a territory manager for Gearinghoff. One note of reference is he attended the best MSU, which is Mississippi State University. Ladies and gentlemen, from Calhoun City, Mississippi, Mr. Seth Davis.
All right.
Hello. I don't know if I can live up to that kind of introduction.
Well, it was just put together, I swear to you, 5 minutes ago. So, I mean, it was the best I could do coming off the tractor
seat. That is not what you're supposed to say, Corey. You're supposed to say that you slaved over that all
Corey,
night.
What were you doing on the tractor? Were you planting?
We planted some early beans. Yeah, it's real early for us up around here. I don't think we've ever planted before, like April 12th before. So this
When's your last frost date?
It's later than this, but it seems like the trend this year, well, the last few years, has been early beans. And we decided that, I guess the industry has decided that beans are better to take a bit higher risk early. They can take it rather than corn.
Right, have a little less susceptibility to failure.
And you know, all the haters will say, well, it didn't hit your insurance date. Well,
I'll say this. True. In 2009, I was farming corn and beans, and my corn was up about 12 inches tall. My beans were up about 4 inches. And we had a Easter freeze, April 17th, 18th, somewhere along in there. And everybody said my corn would be fine. I'd have to replant the soybeans.
Yep.
And they were exactly wrong. Put all of my corn, and it froze the bud growing point out of my soybeans. And that's the best soybeans I ever made. So I'm not scared of planting beans early. I'd rather plant them early than corn, I think.
Yep. That's the trend. So I think it'll be a good experiment. We just got 60 acres, and we're going to stop there.
You're not the only one. I had a conference call with my guys today, and it sounds like farmers all across the state are going today. Yep. So a little bit of corn and more soybeans actually going in. So
Seth, the introduction kind of let our listeners know a little bit about yourself, but I'm curious about what you did before being that engineer on cotton pickers. What did little Seth do?
I grew up on the farm, and that's all I wanted to do. Whenever there was a tractor running, I would sneak out of the house and go to the field wherever they were and get on the tractor, and I would ride all day if I could. And I didn't get off until they turned the tractor off. We had a nanny, so to speak, that took care of me during the day when I was 3 or 4. And it was several times I got in trouble because I would sneak out the bedroom door and take off to the tractor. And she would lose me, and my dad would have to bring me back. But I always loved being in the field, being on the farm, just being outside.
So she would lose you, as in you just were the escape artist.
Exactly. One day I was hiding from her in a cow trough. It had a little cover you could hook to it with a pickup truck moving around. It fed the minerals in it. And she started looking for me, and I jumped in the cow trough, and the cows decided they were suddenly hungry. So I was laying there hiding from her, and the cows were eating the minerals all around me. And I was about 4, I guess.
Your poor mother.
I got in trouble that day.
I bet.
And that's the only day you got in trouble, right?
I won't repeat all the rest of them.
That's the point of the podcast. That's what we're going to sit here and talk about, is all the times that Seth got in trouble.
He's probably just as bad as the people getting out of the tractors on TikTok and recording themselves as the tractors.
Well, you didn't see me near enough beer for all of that.
Yeah, you got a good point there, Corey. So, Dave, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a trend of, I shouldn't even call it a trend. There was a couple of videos of, you know, operators running a tractor on auto steer,
yep,
jump out with their phones so they can form, you know, they can film that tractor still driving through the field, Seth. So now there's no operator in the seat anymore. And they're doing this to become famous, try to get likes, try to get views going on with total disregard for safety.
Yeah.
Well, didn't that all stem from the girls that jumped out of the moving car and they did a dance while the car was moving out the door window? Or somebody else was driving a car for him, maybe?
Well, I think that there's a baseline from a lot of different angles, but I do remember that trend. And most of those trends had somebody in the car driving it still.
Yeah.
Well, I saw there's a gentleman on Farm Talk, I thought, that was berating everybody, saying, if you do this, you know, you get run over. I don't want to say I told you so. And then I saw you made a post, something like that, Corey, that might not be a good idea. And then didn't somebody romp on you on there?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it was like all of us. So it seemed like several Farm Talk people, maybe the OGs, the people that have been there longest, kind of had a coordinated effort.
Wait. I don't know what OG. What's OG?
Original.
Original.
Oh, I thought it was old generation there for a second.
Same thing. You know,
and maybe just the older generation, okay. I guess you could say that, said we need to kind of hit this head on because, you know, whatever. So yeah, we made a TikTok and several people did kind of say, hey, we shouldn't be doing this, guys. And yeah, they come on, said, it's free country, blah, blah, blah. You know, we can do what we want. And that's true. And I guess, you know, you'll get weeded out. I don't know if you saw Tony's today, but that was, that was good.
No, I didn't. I'll have to go back and watch.
What I ended up having to say was, you know, what I say isn't going to stop the people that are making those videos.
No, it's for the young people.
But it's for that 12-year-old that is just getting used to running a disc down the field, and then they get auto steer, and he spends a few hours in there, gets on TikTok and sees that, and is like, well, I could probably do that, you know, and so.
You know, down here, that's not entirely uncommon in the fall. Right where I live is the second largest sweet potato growing region in the United States. Number one is North Carolina. Number two is right here around Bardeman, Mississippi. And if you've ever been around sweet potatoes in the harvest, well, they have a two-row digger, they call it.
Yep.
And they'll have about 10 people on each two-row digger that's literally picking up and grading each sweet potato and putting them in a 20 or 40 bushel box. Well, they run through the field in a creeper gear or as slow as you can get with your CVT. Mm-hmm. The drivers a lot of time will get out of the seat, get back on the digger and ride till it gets to the end, time to turn it around. And then they'll turn it around and get started and then get back on the digger and see it. So a lot of times in the fall, but the tractor's only moving maybe, you know, 100 feet a minute, something like that. It's not fast.
Have you guys seen people making hay do that? I mean, I've seen hay rack guys do that where they don't have anybody on the baler to throw the bales.
Yeah, I think the key that you had there, Seth, is that creeper gear, because I might have went a little bit beyond. I actually stopped at the local cemetery to make mine, and that's what I started my TikTok off with, was you could be here.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is there's a lot of youth on these apps, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, that see you and look up to you as a celebrity, whether you are or not, making good choices or not, they still see it happening. And that, I think that was the point of Farm Talk and the Farm Talk Mafia, to kind of make sure that these kids understand that, yes, there's a time and a place. Maybe it's digging sweet potatoes, but it is not 6 mile an hour while you're disking or incorporating manure or whichever your option is.
That thing don't care.
6 miles an hour, I mean, they'll run over you faster than you can. You can't imagine how fast you can screw up and be dead.
I trip off the steps when it's parked, let alone 6 miles an hour.
And my dad just tripped over the trying to step over the planter drawbar today. And, you know, it's like, you'll die, and you'll die probably pretty quick. What about the family, though, and the people that come up on that scene?
Right.
You know, that's...
when you're young, you think you're invincible. When you get just a little bit older, the common sense really starts kicking in. You're like, you know, that's not a good idea.
Yep. So I said I was going to make one video. I made one and a rebuttal.
Yep.
And I'm going to be done with it because, like I said, Darwinism will kick in. And if you can't
hold my beer, watch this.
Out, you know.
Speaking of holding a beer.
Yeah. So, Seth, we got these sent down to you. A couple of Iowa beers for you to try along right aside with us. I opened up the Tipsy in Tijuana Mexican Lager, so the short can. This is from Back Pocket Brewing. Thank you to Dole Distributing for dropping these off again. Tipsy in Tijuana, a Mexican lager.
So we have like a mixture of beers today, right?
Mixture of companies. Yep. Yeah. Always have a mixture of beers. We've got a mixture of breweries.
And I think we've had a couple of them before, but this will be interesting.
Our signature Mexican lager returns this year with a hint of key lime juice and salt, brewed with flaked corn, rice, and hopped with Matica hops.
What is that?
That's actually the one I'm drinking now. It's a very refreshing summertime beer.
That is.
Yeah.
It's very light.
It is very light.
Yeah.
It almost has a lemon. Oh, that's the key lime.
Hotter the day, the better this beer will be.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a different beer. This is not. There's more to this than a Bud Light or a Coors Light. This is light.
Yeah, I'd throw a little bit extra lime in it, kind of like a Corona, and tip this sucker back on the pontoon. Or yeah,
that's really good.
Is Back Pocket? That's Eastern Iowa, isn't it?
Coralville.
Yep.
So that beer is from Coralville, Iowa, Seth.
How did they come up with a Tipsy and Tijuana Mexican lager when they're from Coralville, Iowa? Art.
Who knows with all these craft breweries? They're coming up with a bunch of different crazy stuff. Are you a big beer drinker?
Yeah.
what's the beer of choice?
Usually Michelob Ultra, and then if one of my buddies has something, whatever they have.
Cold, yep.
Yep, cold. Yep. Free beer is always good beer.
Yep.
So are you in that realm to where you get Yingling?
Yes.
That's one of those that we can't get here in Iowa, and I always enjoy. We made a trip down to Florida this spring, And I really do enjoy a nice Yingling lager.
Yeah, fill that box up that we sent you and say it was undeliverable with Yingling and send it back.
You know, part of my territory is Louisiana, and there's a beer down there I really like. It's Abita Brewing Company. They make a strawberry lager.
Ooh.
And you get it really cold, that is a really good beer.
A buddy of mine, his dad brewed a strawberry lager. And that was really, really good. Almost way too good, of course. Tastes like candy.
Yeah.
So did you guys ask Seth?
Try the Abita.
What's that?
Abita.
Abita, yeah.
Okay, yep. I'll write it down.
All right.
So, Seth, how you're living in Mississippi right now, but did I hear that you were overseas for a while?
Yeah, I worked. Well, when I worked for Case IH, I went to them straight out of college. And I worked in their test engineering department on cotton harvesting, which is we would go around the world with cotton pickers. We'd put on test parts or test machines and run them in the field and report back, write daily reports on what was good, what was bad, what needed changing, that type of thing. And they had me travel a good bit to Australia, Brazil, Mexico, United States. And when I've been single in my early 20s, that was actually pretty cushy. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you see toilets actually flush the wrong direction?
That's, no, I didn't.
I got to know.
So I'm curious about cotton because we don't have anybody that grows cotton up here in our neck of the woods. And I haven't networked
too
with
cold.
Yep. And I haven't networked with anybody that does. So on the cotton picking side, What's that look like? Like I understand the inside of a combine, but is it more just stripping it and putting it into a bin, or how's a cotton picker work?
We make a lot of the cotton pickers here.
I was going to say.
For deer, anyway.
Deer, yep. Right down in Ankeny, Iowa, is the cotton picker.
Yeah. I just never seen them run.
Yeah.
Developed by International Harvester back in the 30s, and there were some other folks that worked on it back earlier than that. But they basically, what it is a pointed, tapered, hardened chrome steel spindle, which has barbs on it that are angled a certain direction that are timed to your ground speed. So as you drive into the cotton plant and the cotton is open, those little barbs grab the cotton, twist it around it, and pull it out of the bowl on the plant. And then that spindle goes around underneath the deal called a doffer that wipes the cotton off, and an air blast catches it and blows it into the basket. And after the spindle goes there, it goes to what they call a moisture column, which cleans and moisturizes the spindle, and then it goes back into the row and keeps doing it again, just over and over and over. Cotton harvesting was, when they invented the cotton picker, was one of the great inventions in farming, I would say, for the South. It led to the what they call the Great Migration in the 40s and 50s, when they didn't need as many people to pick the cotton. A lot of them left and went north to the factories. And the next one was the onboard module builder, which typically when you filled your basket up with cotton, you would have to go to the end of the field or to a bull buggy, which is like a grain cart for cotton.
Yep.
A bull buggy? Is that what you called it?
Yeah, the bull. Yep.
Gotcha.
Bull buggy. Yeah. And you pack it down and leave it in the field in big loads until the gin would come get it. But now they have the onboard module builder, which Deere is a really good one, and they wrap it up in plastic and set it off, and it can sit there until the gin gets ready for it. When it goes to the gin, they separate the seed, the trash, and the lint. They get the moisture right, and they compress it into a really, really tight bale, which a bale of cotton is usually 480 pounds.
Okay.
And they put that in the warehouse and then sell it. Most of it's been going to China, some of it Mexico, not as much in the U.S. anymore. Vietnam, it takes a lot of it nowadays.
See,
180-pound bale of cotton will make, you know, I think like 300 pair of blue jeans and 1,000 pair of underwear.
Wow.
Wow. It is kind of fun to see those cotton pickers spit that bale out that looks like a giant marshmallow.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
They wouldn't be making the payment. They're getting close to $900,000 now.
Wow. Did you notice when he said bull buggy, it was like grain cart?
Uh-huh.
So that solves that. Is there different names for bull buggies?
If there are, I don't remember it.
Well, at least you don't have to deal
with it. There's a large debate on the grain cart,
auger wagon.
What do y'all call? I've called them grain buggies, grain carts. What do y'all call them?
No, it's a grain cart.
Bank out wagon. That would be, that's uppies, isn't it? Or,
yep. No, it is definitely
y'all
a grain cart.
Coke a pop, don't you?
It's a pop.
Yep,
yeah.
Pop.
Pop.
Okay.
Because you all probably right. call a Mountain Dew Coke or any pop Coke.
Yeah,
right?
Down here's a Coke.
Yeah.
You go bring me a Coke. What do you want, a Dr. Pepper?
Yeah. That's one of those. I saw one of those the pictures on social media about when it froze in the Texas area and whatnot, that they understand why us in the Midwest call them pop, because these carbonated sodas had exploded all over their cars because it froze overnight.
I mean, I had a buddy that was down in Texas somewhere, and they were on like a little mini vacation, and the whole town shut down, and there was less than 2 inches of snow. You couldn't even get McDonald's. I mean, they could not drive through that.
They're just not used to it.
But they've all got big trucks. Down in the South, aren't you known for big trucks and jacked up vehicles, and you can't drive through 2 inches of snow?
Red dirt roads.
Smoother than that.
Uh-huh.
You're right. We really can't because we have no snow plow.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, 2 inches, we wouldn't even get the snow plows out up here. We'd just drive over and pack it down.
Yeah, but what happens here, it generally thaws just enough and refreezes in the ice.
Oh, yeah. That would do it.
Yeah, and I think they were all out of power down in Texas, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were.
We were sending power down.
Yep. So then, Seth, so if we were to ask your mom what you do for a living now, how would your mom describe what your job's doing?
Traveling, visiting dealers and customers.
Okay. So then in your words, what are you doing for Gearnoff?
Traveling and visiting dealers.
Good words.
So does Gearnoff have anything in the cotton industry? Or is that...
No.
So that's the cotton industry you're kind of completely out of now.
Right.
Okay.
I ran up until 2 years ago. And cotton is sold by the pound. It's not by the bushel or anything, by the pound. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of 100 acres, and I had some corn and beans. And when it's all said and done, I really didn't, for my investment, I really didn't make anything. And I said, yeah, it's not real smart. So I just rented it out to a sweet potato farmer, which is a good bit better income.
What kind of ground, you said you made corn and beans. Do you, is the ground really good, or what does ground typically cost in your area?
It's been jumping in the last few years. When I was a kid, you could buy good farmland for $750 an acre, and now it's over $4,000. I'd say in the last 10 years, it's gone from $2,500 to $4,000 easily.
So good farmland. And when you're potato farming, you say you're making better off of, you know, up here we get $300 cash rent. I heard today $400 cash rent on corn and beans. Iowa ground, just perspective for our listeners, different part of the country. If you don't mind sharing, what's an average cash rent on something that's a $3,000 ground?
You're going to be from $1 to $250.
And if you grew corn, or you have grown corn and soybeans there, correct? What,
right.
What were your typical good yields, or what are people in the area that grow that, what do they yield?
Dry land good yields would be, a good yield would be 175. Excellent would be over 200 dry land.
That doesn't advantage sound a lot different than us.
The advantage we have in the Delta region is the groundwater is water table is not very deep. You can drill a well to irrigate fairly cheap, so to speak. If you can drill 100 feet and get 600 gallons a minute, well, you can irrigate a lot of ground.
Wow.
Most of the land in the Delta is precision graded. They're going away from center pivots because they can't put out enough water for the crops. Going to furrow irrigation, where they lay out a big poly pipe along the end of the field and poke holes in it, run water down the middle. All our land is pretty much bedded.
Right.
And that's one reason we don't have as much narrow 20 inch or so as y'all do, because we have to put it on beds, because in the spring, this time of the year, you get a lot of rain will drown your crop. So you get it up on the bed to get it out of the rain. And then in the summer, you can poke your holes in your potted pipe and it runs down the middle and waters your crop. So it's very little ground here planted flat unless it's rice.
So we have actually had a couple of guests on. We talked to Matt Swanson at one time, and he just went down to the Mississippi Delta to have a second set for his farm and operation to go down there.
Farming peanuts, I think.
Right. And then we also had talked to a gentleman
Texas, who
I can't remember where he's from, but he engineered his own planter.
Yeah, that's Texas.
He pulled two grain carts together because, like you said, everything's on raised beds. So he needs to hit that row spacing with tire tracks and grain carts. You can't necessarily just drive across that very easily. So it's been interesting to kind of learn about how people farm. But the the mathematician in me is your cash rent is half of Corey's. But your yield potential is about the same.
Yeah.
So the low end has got to be more frequent on that yield range than the high end, right?
Yeah. Dry land, I mean, my best yield was about 180. My worst was 90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that how you got involved with Gearinghoff, row spacing? Is that kind of how you got into their ballgame?
No, I've been to the dealership for about 16 years, and it's a small dealership, and I just created something different.
So you had sold them prior to taking this role with Gearinghoff now that you talked to the dealers?
Actually, no. We were a case dealer, and the whole time I was there, I'd never sold a new corn header.
Really?
And the territory that I serviced for my dealership, like I said, was majority sweet potatoes. Corn was a rotation crop. It was not a primary cash crop at all. It was basically the sweet potatoes are the money, rotate with the corn until we can get back to our money crop.
So you guys sold more of the tractors to pull the equipment. Yep.
Yep.
Corey, do you think you could do that with your family members? You're just ready for something different so you can just swap them out like he did with his job?
Yeah, I've thought about that on the job side before. Yeah, no, I don't think I could do it with a family member.
Just throwing it out there, just curious.
So, Seth, the next beer that I opened up is from Big Grove. So I opened up the Tailwind Golden Ale. So if you want to try that along with us, this one, Corey, is from Big Grove.
This is the Ragbri beer. I think this is what they brewed to have for Ragbri. Oh, yeah. We brewed this light, refreshing golden ale with the oldest, largest, and longest recreational bicycle touring event in the world, Ragbri.
This is like out of Anamosa, DeWitt, and Clinton, Iowa area.
Well, that must be where all their locations are. You're just reading it off the can, cheater.
Fort Dodge, Iowa.
I'm not Waterloo. Cheating.
Maybe that. Oh, maybe that's probably the route.
That might have been the route for Ragbri.
1 week, 439 miles.
He's so back. That's for those of you that are outside of the state of Iowa. Every year, except for last year, didn't they cancel it for COVID?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bike ride that leaves from the western coast of Iowa. You're supposed to dip your bike wheel in one river, ride all the way across the state, and dip it in the other river.
Yep, you dip your back tire in the Missouri, and you dip your front tire in the Mississippi.
Thanks for bailing me out for not remembering which one was on which side. So let's give the Tailwind Golden Ale a taste.
That's a nice light drinking beer too.
Well, this would be a Ragbri beer. This would be perfect.
It's a big party. I don't know how those guys do it. 439 miles. They drive ride 70-some miles a day.
And drink 70-some beers a day.
Yeah.
They have like $1,200 bicycles that do it for them, don't they?
Well, just kidding. You can get that.
It's almost got a dry finish.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, kind of like a wine.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I like it.
I like this.
There's no tartness to it at all. It's really smooth.
Yeah. Smooth. Yeah, a little bit like fuller taste in the back. It's
not boring.
It's not the worst beer I've tasted.
No, I just can't get over the fact of how dry it is. Like I'm almost thirsty still.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the key. They sell you more.
Oh, that's pretty.
It's like
good.
Giving you peanuts at the bar.
Drink responsibly. Yes. That's my beer.
So, Seth, besides drinking beer, what do you like to do for fun?
These days. Well, I've been collecting old Cadillacs, and now my daughter's getting old enough, I take her fishing because she loves fishing, and I enjoy going fishing with her.
What kind of fishing?
Brim, bass, and catfish.
Brim? I've never heard of a brim.
It's a bluegill.
Is it really?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, like a bluegill.
Bluegill, or sunfish.
Do you like to just catch them, or are you a connoisseur of cooking fish as well?
I'm a connoisseur of watching my wife dress them and cooking them and eating them. I'll dress a catfish, but she knows how to do the fillet knife on the brim and the bass.
That's teamwork.
Yep.
You know what I haven't seen a lot of media buzz about lately for fishing is the noodling.
Oh,
you guys
yeah.
ever get into the noodling of the catfish, like with your catching them with your hand?
Yeah, people call it noodling, but down here we call it grabbling.
Grabbling.
Grabbling. I've never heard that.
Grabbling.
That almost makes more sense than noodling. I never understood the noodle part.
Yeah.
I never understood that either. I mean, where's the noodling involved there? I mean, you're swimming down, putting your hand in his mouth.
So for our listeners, Seth, can you describe what noodling a catfish is?
Grabbling.
Yep. You need to find a where they're spawning, and the catfish will be in a cubby hole, so to speak. Like a lot of people put tractor tires, bathtubs, culverts, any sort of thing in, say, 3 to 6 feet of water. And you have to mark it so nobody else comes and finds it. You have to know where it is. And then when they go on the spawn, you swim down or walk into the water, and you stick your hand up in there, and you feel the catfish. If you're lucky, you grab them by the gill or grab them in the mouth, and you pull them out. And generally, you can get some pretty big ones that way, but you catch them by hand.
So you catch them by hand, and you know where they're going to be. So I assume you got to go check a various number of these spots.
Right.
In order, because they're not going to be one in every single spot. That's the art of it, is trying to create a habitat that they want to be in, so when you go there, you can reach in and grab one.
I think people will actually go and, like, if there's holes in the banks and stuff like that, they'll stick their hand in there. And I thought sometimes, won't they bite your hand if they're protecting a nest or something like that? So,
they'll bite you.
I love fishing, but I've never wanted to do that because you see those big-ass snapping turtles.
Yeah.
Their head's, like, that big around.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a hand anymore.
No. Nope. And snakes. No way.
Hey, it's part of the excitement. I mean, y'all talking about people getting off the tractor and watching it drive through the field.
Yes.
Hey, swim down in the creek and stick your hand in a log.
And there's a point, you get south far enough and all the snakes will kill you.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
All the videos I've seen, those catfish are giant to where...
They're huge.
Yeah, I can't imagine... I did see one to where there was an alligator snapping turtle, and it actually latched onto a guy's ear. Completely gone. Ear just disappeared. Yeah, I don't know.
How did they get so close to his ear?
And you guys are called to muddy waters. You can't see your feet when you're out there doing this. You can't see anything in the water.
No.
But at least you're raising your daughter right, and she likes fishing right alongside with you.
Yeah.
I like boating. If you go out in a boat and fish, I like that.
Yeah. So you could catch some brim, probably put a worm on a hook.
I can do that.
Yeah. Oh, last time we went fishing, we went on. I had a buddy has a little charter outfit on the Mississippi River. We caught she's eight. This was when she was seven. I told him I wanted her to catch a fish bigger than she is. She weighed 48 pounds, and the third one we caught weighed 50.
Wow.
So that made our day right there.
Pull her right in.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. So the cool thing about combines, Seth, is the fact that a lot of these combines are going to quick couplers. The heads and the combines mate in a one quick fell swoop, fast motion. And one of the things I've been hearing about this spring is everybody's hooking up their planters and all the hydraulic hoses on their soil finishers and field cultivators and everything that they're running out in this field. I wonder why, and that's the same thing this gentleman thought, is how long until we have a quick attach, single point hookup for a planter to the tractor or field cultivator to tractor?
I think you can get it now if you.
Oh, really?
If you make it yourself.
You're talking.
You got to make it yourself, though.
Yeah, it's not factory.
They have a fast hitch for most planters.
I get the three point hitch.
Well, not even
quick
three
hitch.
Point, just a two point.
Yep. I'm talking hydraulic hoses.
I see.
So, like.
Oh, yeah, Seth, like a loader.
So, Seth, for you, for your gearing off heads, all electronics, all hydraulics, everything, it just is a quick coupler to the combines, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so I'm thinking something like that for the planter. I mean, I love Outback wraps, don't get me wrong, but wouldn't it be a lot easier if we just had a single point latched it up?
And also, I think Nick McCormick was talking on Tony and his podcast about Fendt and their tractors. You could hook up whatever hose, it doesn't matter if you get them wrong or whatever,
yep.
You can change it in the cab.
You can reassign it.
You can reassign it. That's pretty badass.
See, that would be great to do any sort of implement you hook to your tractor or your combine and have a quick coupler like that. But the problem is the industry standards, I'm going to say. Up until the 80s, I mean, you had different companies had different couplers for their hydraulic hoses. It took, what, 40 years before they finally settled on that. And now getting a industry standard quick coupler, which unless you traded all your equipment and got everything with quick couplers, yeah. I mean, you're going to have a tractor sitting in the shed you want to hook up, move something around with. Well, then they're, now you can't do it anymore.
Well, even Bobcat did that with the flat face connectors. I say Bobcat, Case, John Deere, everybody right. did. But I think they all went with the Bobcat flat face, I thought.
But that's a good point. Having all the Pioneer adapters for the hydraulic hoses on the older now just would, I could see. That's a good point, Seth. I didn't think that far into it. Just kind of thought it'd be nice to have an easy route to go.
Didn't Bobcat?
Oh, it would. It'd be great to back up and just hook up and flip one lever and be done and have all your electronics and hydraulics ready to go. But
yeah.
Didn't Bobcat create the Bobtach system for your buckets?
They did, I think, yeah.
But now you can get that on everything.
You can get that on everything, yeah.
I don't have it.
I wonder.
You need it. If you don't have it, you need it.
What were you saying,
Seth?
While
you're doing that, get the combine manufacturers to all have the same hookup on their combines.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, because you got to, for you to, because you have a head that can go on any color of equipment, right? So. What's it take to change? I know we've done some stuff demoing and things like that. We had a Razor out on our farm last year, and you know the guys are good. They can change it over in an hour or so, but it seems like why is it different with everyone? What's it take? Just an adapter plate?
Well, that and the hydraulic hookups. I mean, the Case, John Deere, and the Lexion, and the Ideal are all different, like you're talking about, how they hook them up, them together. And the width of the feeder house, some manufacturers a little bit different than others, and you have to get the filler plates matched to the feeder house. So
don't you have some engineering buddies that you could reach out to and tell them to get their crap together?
It'd be nice even on the auction side. When I go, does this work with that? And so I get a phone call and somebody will just say, does that work with my, you know, number, 62, whatever, but, you know, and everybody has a number and they assume that you know what number they're talking about. And you don't have a clue. And I don't know what type of hookups, what vintage, is it a 3 series, 4 series, you know, what is it?
Yeah.
And I'd love it on my side. I think it would help the whole industry.
I just got distracted looking out the window, and it's still not raining, and I still feel bad that Corey's not out in the field.
I told you, we had 60 acres worked, and I planted 60 acres. The only person you should feel bad for is my dad, who's trying to get the sprayer going to spray it.
So, but I think we'd rather have the moisture. We're pretty dry.
Well, we are dry. I got to wait just a little bit, because I got fertilizer coming to my house, and I called the co-op day. He's like, it's going to be like you're way down on the totem pole. And I'm a little frustrated. So here's my rant for the day is I had a soil sample like snow on the ground. And I said, come for a soil sample as soon as snow's off. He said, all right, game on. He came out. I was like, all right, I'd like you, the agronomist, to tell me what was the difference between last year and this year. And we're putting some new hay in the ground. What does that look like? And he just got back to me after 5 emails back and forth, 2 phone calls. And where the heck's our soil sample? And then he says, well, I gave you a prescription today. And I said, well, how much is that going to cost? I don't know. I'll have to look it up. Okay. Well, it's been 5-6 weeks and it's about to rain and everybody's going. And I also tried to be ahead of this and get, so there's my rant.
I got 2 things on top of that ramp. A, thanks for calling me. I sell alfalfa. And B, well, you should have called Brody.
I actually talked with Brody. Our kids are in baseball together. And so we had a conversation out there and he's going to come out and he actually is going to get me some stuff. So BW Fusion is going to come my way.
Cause I'm serious when I said, cause he was trying to talk me into some stuff that wasn't his product, some lime. And we just limed and he's like, we need more lime. I'm like, we just spent money on that, like a lot. And I'm like, before we do anything, let's just sample that again. He was there in 3 hours. And he sampled it, so we should have results.
We just talked about this on our Farm for Profit podcast of how accountability is huge.
Yep, being able to put others first.
Corey, are you in that $300 to $400 an acre rent category?
I do not have any of that, but yes, it is. Well,
you're in the area.
What kind of yields do you have to make to justify paying $400 an acre rent?
Well, we had one in Southwest Iowa that was $417.50, and that was a 2-year commitment, and that was not great ground. I mean, it's fine, but on a good year, and maybe we're not the best of farmers, but we've averaged on a whole field average like 250 before. But that's amazing. That's not a whole farm average. That's a whole field average.
Yeah, you gotta combine the yield with some higher prices.
Sure, we see 300s on the yield monitor.
Yeah.
But if we're pushing 220 whole farm average, we're doing really good.
But have you found problems with the I'm renting mine out now, and I've been working with him. I told him, I said, I know you can have it 3 years, and then I've upped it again for another 3 years. But on a 2 year rent, it looks to me like, unless you were a good steward of the land, you could come in and just kind of milk it and then let it go.
I had that happen with my farm. I rented out to a guy that wanted to pay very high cash rent. And I had a hunch based on the neighbor farmer said, you better watch yourself. So I wrote into my lease agreement that they had to put so many pounds of P and so many of K, so many units of everything, had to check pH every year. They couldn't just come in and rape the soil. Yet that's what the farmer did. The most successful outcome does not always mean the highest price.
Right.
It's a good PSA. It's a good PSA.
We're full of that today.
You know, it's
don't get out of a moving tractor. Don't rape the soil. We've got it all covered.
Hey, we are in a bad high-cash rent deal.
Here's one more. Y'all sent me a t-shirt in the box. I'm wearing it now.
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Mole of the Bag podcast.
First thing I did, I looked at it. It's 100% cotton. Thank you.
Woo.
There you go.
No
ding
rayon,
dong.
No polyester.
You got lucky there, Tanner.
Oh, no, that was strategery.
That was strategery.
I was actually concerned. He asked for a tall, and we don't have talls. Oh, so boy. Maybe his belly's showing, and we just can't see it on the camera.
I do practice beer drinking every so often.
Well, I just opened up the five cities. So, Seth, if it's not handy for you, that's the next one we're going to try, is five cities from Bettendorf, Iowa.
Oh, Bettendorf. Hold on a minute. Let me go get it.
Yep, go right ahead. This is the Bikini Bottom. Isn't there a cartoon? SpongeBob. SpongeBob's a kid cartoon that he lives in Bikini Bottom. So this is Five Cities Brewing, Bettendorf, Iowa. The Bikini Bottom Pineapple Wheat Ale.
This is better than the pineapple we had
this
2 weeks ago.
Is not better. Pineapple Wheat Ale is...
This is what I expect.
The one that makes the face.
Pineapple cups. This is good.
Yeah, right. We had a pineapple sage last time.
Yeah.
And that was atrocious. But this is a classic but sweet American wheat packed with healthy dose of pineapple and will remind you to cook. Oh, remind you of a cool Hawaiian breeze, not a cooking Hawaiian breeze.
You can have a luau.
I think of suntan oil reminds me of Hawaiian breeze, not pineapples.
This would go good with a Canadian bacon and pineapple pizza.
I agree.
This is the Bikini Bottom?
Yes.
Bikini. I like it already. I haven't even opened it.
Uh-huh. If you like pineapples, you might like it.
5.7 ABV. This can has pineapples all over it. And then the logo for the Bettendorf, Iowa, Five Cities Brewing is a puppy dog. And it says it's Henry approved, certified good boy. What do you think of the beer, Seth?
I like it. It tastes, like you said, a little pineapple. It's all three are different. This one, every one has their place. I wouldn't be scared to have any of them in my cooler.
This one. There's a good review. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was going to play off the Bikini Bottoms. A while back, you guys were giving me crap for a tweet I made about Braless and Flawless. Have you guys seen the trend?
Think it was crap.
Have you guys seen a trend with Bikini Bottoms just getting smaller and smaller? And I think the social norm has changed. That's my discussion.
It's just,
nobody cares.
I think we're about ready to get hit with some.
Oh, we're looking at the radar now.
We better. Yeah, he's trying to make me feel better about myself. We better get something.
Are y'all that dry?
My wife texted me and said the drive home sucks. I'm like, why? It's fine here.
Rain's coming.
How dry are y'all? I mean, rain.
Tiles, at least around my dad's place, Northwest Iowa, tiles are not running. So we don't have moisture 4 or 5 feet in the ground. At least not enough to get the tiles to run. How you doing here,
Corey? You know what they say about planting in the dust, bins will bust.
Yeah.
I
welcome the dryness.
Never heard that.
What? You've never heard that.
I've never heard that. I've heard a lot of sayings. I've never heard that one. Planting in the dust, the bins will bust.
Planting in the dust, bins will bust.
That's pretty
good. The conditions are good, right? And I think I would rather it be dry here.
I would rather plant dry than wet, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, on the edge of dryness.
Yep.
2012 was a very good year for us. We were right on the edge. And I will get flack for saying that because there was a lot of people that had some crap yields. And we had a couple fields that were crap. But like for the most part, our soils here are deep and hold a lot of water.
You know, right here, I farm on one side of a creek from another farmer, or I did farm. And I was wanting to plant corn. This is several years ago. And I went out in the field. I said, it's just a little bit too wet, a little bit too wet. And this is an older farmer. He's almost 90, but he always is one of the top farmers around here. He passed me with a planter and started planting. I said, I have the same soil type. I'm starting to plant. So I took off. Worst decision I ever made. It was just a little too wet, and the planter was smearing the seed trench.
Yep.
Corn, when it came up, the roots went straight down the seed trench, and it was always a mistake.
Old tomahawk, I learned a heck of a lesson.
Tomahawk roots. I do not plant too wet.
Yep.
You get one time to do it. Sometimes two, yep. If you really screw up.
Yeah, so if you go back.
If I kept farming, I'd be an expert by the time I was 80.
Well, maybe not, because the older guy that drove by you listened to, and that didn't go so well.
That's a good point. If you go back to our episode where we're talking about getting the planters ready and getting ready for this spring, that it is. It's the most important pass of the year, so make sure that we do it right. I understand the calendar is going to tell you one thing, but making sure that we do it the right way is going to be key. So Seth,
don't do it because your neighbor's doing it. Do it when it's right.
Yeah. So Seth, kind of a fun question here for you. You're obviously getting interviewed and having a conversation with us, but who would you rather be interviewing you?
Well, I'm gonna go back to the beer. Somebody in the bikini, maybe. Yeah. <there we go.
laughs> I see on the list here that are you a pilot?
No.
You're not a pilot?
That must have been bad.
Where'd you come up with
that? That must have been bad show prep. All right, you want to pretend to be a pilot?
Cut that out.
I could probably fly. I don't know about take off and land.
I don't know if I could take off.
How about this? Interviewing you right now. What's a question that we should be asking you?
Oh. When will the brim be spawning?
All right.
Yeah, when will the bluegill be spawning?
Yeah.
You got to say it. Bluegill. Yeah.
That was
right now. Pretty much.
That was a new question. I'd never heard an interview, but I got to interview somebody the other day and they said, tell me something that's not on your resume. Never heard that question before in any interview I've been on. So you have quite an impressive resume. What's something that's not on your resume?
My affinity for old cars and old signs, I guess. The old Cadillacs and the old porcelain signs I collect.
Did you ever watch that TV show American Pickers?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of times they get deals or pass up deals that I wouldn't pass up. And some they pay, but they know a lot more than I do. They come out all the time. They got a TV show. I don't.
So they're Iowa, or yeah, LeClaire, Iowa,
yep.
Correct?
They're a couple hours east of us.
So it's always fun for me to watch, but do we need to send them down to your place?
No.
He don't want to give them up. He's the guy.
No, I probably wouldn't want to take what they'd want to give.
That's fair. Well, that's a good point.
So, do you find these old Cadillacs and restore them yourself, or are you buying them restored, or sending them somewhere to get restored?
No, I fix them up myself. I have my old farm shop, and I got a big wood heater in there, and I can get it warm in the winter, and that's where I go piddle, kind of get out of the house.
How cold does it get? Like,
I would move out there.
I was gonna say, so this wood heater takes it from 65 to 72, or how cold do you actually get?
No, I can keep it in about 70, but we have a 40-degree day down here is actually pretty cold.
Yeah, that we just put our shorts on this spring when we hit 40.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you mean. I live there. When you're used to zeros and tens, when it hits 40, you think it's a warm spell. If you're used to 70s and it goes to 40, you're about to freeze.
So where did you live when you were up here?
I lived in East Moline for a while, had an apartment, and then I bought a house in a little town called Andalusia, which is about 10 miles west of Rock Island.
Okay, Illinois, yeah.
Yep.
I sold a farm there the other day.
And what were you doing up here?
That's when I worked for Case.
That was when you were there. Okay.
Yeah, their engineering for the cotton pickers was there at the factory where they built the combines there in East Moline.
So is there just a fleet of engineers that are just trying to like piss off the farmers and the people, the mechanics that work on it? That it's like, you know, no. We can't make it that easy for them. We better put this up under the cab where they can't get to it.
No, I actually, like I said, I started off in test department. I'd have to go to the field and I'd have to work on stuff myself. And I went back to the factory and I gave a lot of earfuls about why did you do this? Why did you do that? on different things. But
I like the engineering and the all the Apple products. If you buy a DJI drone, those are, when you pull that out, I didn't even know that there's your Apple Watch is going off. Look at that.
Why are you talking to my Apple Watch?
Why are you talking to my Apple Watch?
I really like these Apple Watches.
See, somebody engineered that to be pretty cool.
It's listening. They're all listening.
They're all listening.
So what's your favorite Gehringhoff product that you guys sell?
It had to be the Rotodisc.
Rotodisc, Cornhead?
Yeah.
It is pretty cool. I've looked at them before. We ultimately didn't go with them, but...
I would say they're not the perfect fit for every situation. I mean, they'll shred your stalk up so much that I've had people say they shred it too good that it'll wash away or the wind will blow it away.
Right. Yeah.
Because when you turn a stalk into confetti, what's going to hold it there? But some people, that's what they want. Some people want something a little bit different. And that's, you know, Gehringhoff covers all the bases on what is your operation.
It's awesome if you're running tillage right behind it and get that stuff incorporated. But when you get the 60-mile-an-hour wind days, it's like snow drifting.
Which would be more of a situation for you to have a horizon, which leaves in little more chunks.
Yep.
Or the new advanced, our new chopping rollers.
Yep.
Does anybody pull a baler behind a combine and just bale it up and make cornstalk bales?
People were doing that, yeah.
There's some prototypes out there.
Is there?
If you need bales, but like...
You got to be cattle.
There's like, like in Iowa, there's like what, 5% or 10% of farmers? I don't know that number for sure, but how many guys, at least around here, do you know that bale up corn stalks on a percentage basis?
Percentage pretty low, but yeah. The guy, since I'm part of the cattlemen's, I think of everybody I know until who does corn stalks.
Until the cellulosic ethanol plant gets going again.
That's
but
right.
Then everybody's going to be doing grass.
But now they got a new interchange coming in, and you can't haul your stuff over the new interchange, and you're not going to be able to get there. So it's going to change things up.
It is. It's going to mess a lot of things up around here locally.
What happened with the interchange? Why can't you haul over it?
Right now, there's just an old, an old two-lane highway that used to be there that you could cross with big farm equipment, and then it turned into four-lane, and now there's 4-to-1 accidents on a couple of the corners, so the DOT is thinking, let's make an overpass. Well, an overpass, you're not supposed to take big wide equipment. If you're taking something that's 15 foot wide, you're not supposed to take it across the overpass. So that's going to reroute them, you know, 5 to 8 miles out of their way to go on the other side of that road to get to the biofuels plant.
Yeah, all comes down to road width and lane width up here. So it's going to be a limiting factor. But Seth, one question that we always like to ask our guests is, what do you think the most successful farmers all have in common?
They crunch the numbers.
Okay, so they pay attention to detail. Yet elaborate on that a little bit.
The best farmers know what they want to do or have a plan for 2 or 3 years in advance. They're looking ahead. They're running the spreadsheets. They're doing the dollars and cents per acre. I'm going to say it's not by the seat of their pants, but it's what the spreadsheets tell them to do.
Data.
Data.
Here it comes.
The currency of farming.
I didn't say it. All I said was data. That's all I said.
He's got you trained.
We knew where he was going. That's the whole point, listeners, is that they'll know that they need an advisory team and they understand that the data matters.
Yes, absolutely. That's one thing I love about Gehringhoff. With our headers, we have probably some of the least downtime, the least parts needs, and the highest resale. So at the end of the day, Gehringhoff headers are probably your cheapest option per acre per year to run by far.
Have you ran any? Do you guys have any guys out with the razor, the bean head?
I have sold my first one this year.
So it hasn't ran yet?
They've been more up north.
Yep.
Down here, they hired me last 2 years ago, and haven't really pushed it until I started pushing. I finally got my first one sold. I didn't want to push it until we ran it in rice to make sure it would work.
Yep.
And it did work. So now we're starting to go with it here.
So we demoed one last fall, and that thing's got all the bells and whistles. I mean, it's got the draper system. It's got air system
the
on
air
it.
Air system?
Yeah, the air system. So it's like sneaking air in. It's not a big thing like you think about when...
Right out front of...
Yeah, it's coming in on like a on these little quarter-inch air lines under the head and pushing up right behind the cutter bar. And then you can make that thing like... You can make the combine smile. I should have got it on video. You can make it smile. You can make it frown. Like... All on hydraulics. It's pretty cool.
Well, yep. If I had your kind of money, I'd have bought one.
Your kind of money. Listen to this. Well, Seth, if our listeners are going to find you, they're going to find you at SethDave15889371.
Maybe that's his phone number.
That's not your phone number, is it?
Phone number.
That's his number of girlfriends.
Number. I'll tell you how that came about. When Garanoff hired me, I had heard of Twitter, but I'd never looked at it, never been on it. And the current sales manager, when I got hired, wanted me to get on Twitter and start showcasing different things here and there. And that was a decision made in about 30 seconds in a boardroom at St. Cloud, Minnesota, to get me on Twitter. So,
well, you might gain.
Now, here I have a Twitter. Here I go.
There you go. You might gain a couple new followers. But yes, listeners, if you're curious about getting in touch with Seth or wanting to learn more about him, Seth Dave 15889371.
And when you say Seth Dave, I think with an E.
Oh no, no Dave, D A V.
There you go, Dav. Seth Dav. There you go.
But no, we really appreciate the connection, getting to know you, Seth. Obviously, that connection came through Gearinghoff. I think they've got a real special employee that they have here. It was a lot of fun learning about the South. Like I said, I've been curious about noodling, catfish, and cotton for a long time because I knew nothing about either one of those. So I appreciate you sticking around, putting up with us, and having a conversation.
1,000 pairs of underwear.
Thank you all. I've enjoyed it. Like I said, the three very good beers y'all sent me. Let's do it again tomorrow. Hell, send me some more beer.
All right, let's sign him up. What do you say, Corey?
I say crack a back pocket brewing, crack a Big Grove brewing, crack a Big Grove brewery, crack a Five Cities brewing beer. You deserve it.
Intro music recorded by Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys. Commentary added by Elena Montemagni. And credit to bensound.com for music.